Hello, I am Jamie from Stonemaier Games, and today I have three special guests. I'm so excited to talk to Gabe, Paul, and Ryan today about our favorite games that are hidden, overlooked, or underrated. We'll talk a little bit as we go about how we chose these games, why this category came up. Let's do brief introductions really quick before we jump in. And today's order will be Gabe, Paul, and then Ryan. So, Gabe, why don't you let us know who you are and why you selected this category?
Yeah, thanks, Jamie. Thanks for having me. I'm Gabe. I am a fledgling board game designer. I have one title signed with Skybound, not out yet. And for my day job, I make documentaries. So you may have seen a short doc that I made with New York Times, a series called Almost Famous. And I decided to go sort of, I guess, more on the overlooked or kind of on the underrated side, not hidden, definitely. I went with nostalgic sort of mass market games that we maybe in the hobby don't really think about too much or underestimate.
Awesome.
Uh,
About you, Paul?
so oh yeah. So I'm Paul. I run a game podcast called Games Overboard, and I also I've been in the hobby for like 6 years now or so, and really excited to be here to talk with Jamie again, things like that. And for my list, I got picked because I said like guilty pleasure games, like games that some people like frown upon in the hobby, but for whatever reason we just enjoy and just share the love about these games that other people just may not see the good in or overlook in some other way.
Awesome.
I'm Ryan. I've been gaming for many, many years now. I did some reviews. I part owned a board game store at one point. Got a bunch of games, went Kickstarter crazy for a few years. All the games I picked are actually Kickstarter ones that I just feel are really good games that never really got any attention. They're all kind of outside the top 1,000. They got very, very limited or no retail releases. And yeah, these are games that I just try and get to the table whenever I can with new people.
Great. And I also looked at, I did look at the BoardGameGeek rankings. Most of my games, I think, are rated 2000 or lower. And I also tried to not pick games that are all that new because I figured that there are some games on that list that I know will climb in the rankings and probably reach a lot more people, but they need a little time to reach that. So why don't we jump in? We're going to do honorable mentions really quick, and then we'll dig deeper into our top three. So, Gabe, any honorable mentions that you want to mention that didn't quite make your list?
Yeah, I first started thinking about forgotten, I guess, not really forgotten, but overlooked hobby games that are more in our niche here. So a few of those that I decided not to go that route, but Meshika. I don't know if it's Mexico or Meshika. I think it might be Meshika. Abomination and Marrakech.
What about
All
you,
right.
Paul?
So, for me, I also looked at games that were like outside of the top 1,000 as well. And so the ones I picked were the Rick and Morty deck builder of all things. Mostly because the Cryptozoic deck builders, from what I've told, they let you build like these huge combos that I've never seen a deck builder before. So I picked put that one in there. The oatmeal games, I kind of lumped them all into one. They're just great little card games, little filler games. I love them all. And Risk Lord of the Rings Edition specifically, because that one has strongholds and leaders that give you boosts to your rolls and give you like something to fight for, which is, a new way to, twist the rules of Risk that I really liked.
Nice. And Ryan?
It's a very well done dice placement game that has a unique theme. Tavarua, which is a surfing themed game, and Chaosmos, kind of a find the hidden object type game. All those are all Kickstarters as well.
Ryan, I think I missed your first one before Tavarua. What was one right before that?
Waggle Dance.
Oh, okay, Waggle Dance. Yeah.
Great name.
I love that name.
That's the bee dancing game. Is that right? Great. Ryan, you're freezing a little bit for me. So
if anything
seems, yeah, but you're okay right now. It comes in and out.
Okay.
It'll work. Yeah. And then I have some honorable mentions, some older ones, Scotland Yard and Stratego, and then Shipwreck, Arcana, Legacy of Dragonholt, Nirvana, Crave, Twinkle, Starship, Trade on the Tigris, Last Friday, Honga, Time Stories Revolution, The Hadal Project, Flotilla, and Summit. These are all the games that were ranked fairly low on BoardGameGeek that I really enjoy and hope more people discover. Hmm. But not quite my top three. We're going to jump in there. Starting with Gabe, what's your number three?
All right. For my number three, I picked a game called Penguin Pileup from 1996. Basically, it's a game where you're sort of doing a reverse Jenga. You're adding, you've got a little pile of penguins, trying to add them onto this sort of funky looking iceberg, which is balanced on top of almost like a pin. So the board itself, every time you play something, is kind of like moving around in a very odd way. Super simple dexterity, placement game, and has one of those just hilarious table presences. But would love to see, games like this in the hobby where, strange physical shapes and like things that have to do with touch or balance.
Are these photos doing it justice, Gabe?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
At first, I thought it was going to be something like animal upon animal, but this is completely different. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really neat. If any penguins fall off, while you're doing your placement, they're added back to your sort of little penguin troop. You don't want penguins in this game. You're trying to get rid of all of your penguins. So every time something falls off and you, during your turn, you add it back to your personal pile.
Interesting. I'm glad you brought this up because it's certainly one that I've overlooked and haven't heard of. So that's Penguin Pileup. That's Gabe's number three. Awesome. This makes me even more excited to hear what you all are talking about today, because I'm guessing there'll be some games that I've never heard of.
So, my number three is much more well-known. I'm going to go from most well-known to least well-known. Hopefully, that's how my list is going to go. So, mine is Whitehall Mystery. It's, the smaller child of Whitehall, or Letters from Whitechapel, and it's just such a streamlined game, and it's such a great game of cat and mouse. And, the person playing Jack is just always on the run, and you're just, every time you move, they're just right behind you. They know where you are the whole time, and you're just trying to be two steps ahead of them and it's just perfect. Like, it's the right amount of time, minimal rules. It's just the most streamlined version of a hidden movement game I've ever played.
And that's actually the same reason I put Scotland Yard on my list, because it's so streamlined of a hidden movement game. Yeah, Whitehall Mystery. Is this the only Whitehall game?
From what I can tell, yes. Okay. From my knowledge,
I love when I got into the hobby, I loved Fury of Dracula. I still love that game, but it's so fiddly and it's so big and it takes so long. And like Whitehall Mystery is just, it is the answer. While I do like the Dracula theme, though.
Yeah, I recently got Beast, and that one is amazing. But again, it's huge and it's long, And this one, it's like a half hour, 45 minutes, and you can just play a game. It's great.
This is why I was asking about this. There's a game called Letters from Whitechapel.
Yeah,
that is a different game, clearly. But
yeah, this one, from what I've never played Letters from Whitechapel, but from what I'm told, they're very much the same game. It's just this is a more trimmed down version of it. A lot of the extra rules are cut out of it, things like that. This is just strictly, move and, do the thing and then move again. And they're just trying to catch you. There aren't any, there's no battling or anything. There's no extra stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for bringing that one up.
I've played Whitechapel a few times.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Great. Well, that's Whitehall Mystery as Paul's number three. And Ryan, what about you?
All right, for my number three from 2017, I've got Soul, Last Days of a Star, which was a, like I said, a Kickstarter. It's there's a bunch. You play a culture who is, has built their civilization around a star who is now, which is now dying, going, it's turning into a black hole, and so you have to hang star, and you do that by setting up all these pieces that Jamie's showing you here to transfer energy from the sun out to your mothership. There's some neat player interactions where you can use other players' buildings in certain instances. It just really, I felt it was really unique, scales well between all the player counts. Yeah, I'm a little bit of a space, actually space themed.
Awesome. It's a visually beautiful game. The box and the board are very evocative.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They got a very limited retail release. I think they're doing another. They just did another thing, which I liked. It does look very nice on the table.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm a sucker for simplistic box art like that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this box art right here. Yeah,
so good.
Yeah, that's really cool. Awesome. Well, I'm curious so far, given that, well, I'll ask this after I mention mine. I'm going to ask you all if you have played any of these games that we've mentioned, if anyone has played any of the other ones. My number three is Terra Nova. Terra Nova is kind of the simpler follow-up to Terra Mystica. And it's essentially just a distilled version of Terra Mystica, a modern, fairly heavy Euro classic. That removes a few of the elements. It removes the priests and it removes the workers. So you just have really one resource to work with, money and magic a little bit. And otherwise it retains the asymmetric feel of Terra Mystica. It retains the interesting interactions of where you build related to other players and all the terraforming elements of the map itself. It plays in about an hour compared to Terra Mystica. If I have 2 hours, I'll still probably play Terra Mystica, but I love Terra Nova, and I was really surprised going through the rankings that it didn't really take off, it seems like. It seems like most people were either happy with Terra Mystica, or maybe they just weren't looking for a lighter version of it, because not too many people have played it or rated it.
So does it maintain the like economy system where, it's been a while since I played Terra Mystica, but I remember there being sort of like a buildup or like almost a queue of like your money, your resources don't turn into resources for a while.
And Terra Mystica, that might be Terraforming Mars that you're thinking of maybe?
No, I'm thinking of that like little purple track with the
resources. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, so like the income that you're gaining, yes, it is a little bit more. Like you could kind of see it here on this mat, how you're just gaining money. Like the income doesn't really ramp up very much like it did in Terra Mystica.
I see.
So everything's a little more simple and streamlined, and yet it still works somehow.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to play the Terra, any of the Terra games, and just haven't yet.
Yeah, it's a great, great line of games. The most recent one is Age of Innovation, is the latest, and that's like a heavier Terra Mystica.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
love Terra Mystica. I would love to get Terra Nova to the table. Do you feel like it's like a good sort of bridge for folks who maybe aren't used to playing more complicated hobby games?
Yeah, I think it's a great entrance into medium weight Euro games, and since there's other games in this brand too, if you end up liking this one, then you can spin off into space. If you want to guy project, go Age of Innovation or Terra Mystica. So far, do we have any? Has anyone played any of the games that we've mentioned? Soul, Whitehall Mystery, Terra Nova, or Penguin Pileup? It sounds like we're all on our own.
I've played Whitehall Mystery.
You have? Okay, that's right. That's right. You just said that. Okay, so we got one in there. Well, let's see if we increase that number.
I played the parent Letters from Whitechapel, and then I've played Terra Nova a couple of times as well on BGA.
Okay, it's on BGA. Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, let's try out our number two picks and see how we do there. Gabe, what's your number two?
Okay, my number two is a game called Goosebumps, Terror in the Graveyard from 1995. This is a nostalgia pick for me. I remember playing it as a kid. But the really cool thing, I mean, it's got a lot of flaws, this game, but there are gems in it that you're like, whoa, this is cool. It's kind of like an early competitive sort of thing. You're technically cooperating, but there are ways people can get left behind. But the real awesome, my favorite part about it is that there are three small boards under the main board of the board game. And each turn, these three small boards can move. And the top board has some cutouts in it. So the space that you're on, its meaning can change throughout the game. And in fact, your avatar, your player piece, can get shifted into a crypt and get, you know, lost in the crypt for the rest of the game. So I thought it was a great sort of dynamic board, which I don't see a lot of. And replaying it recently kind of electrified me. Like, man, we got to get more stuff like this out there.
That's so cool. Yeah,
this is a really interesting board layout here. Does it rest in the box while you play, like these photos show?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's something that's superfluous at the end. You're trying to, like, go defeat the phantom at the end of the crypt. And the only way to get there is to pick up this key item. And then once you have the key, you get there. Once you get there, you drop a little skull into, like, a chimney thing where there is a phantom standee kind of just hanging out there. And if the ball kind of like, what's that game called, Plinko? Plinko style, if the skull falls in the correct manner, it will trigger this phantom to like flip out and over the board, and that's the signal that you've won. Once this thing is like basically a field goal, it's very, very fun visually.
That is really visually very, very interesting. And yeah, I think this is a good example of some of these mass market games. They have an interesting hook or gimmick, and maybe the game is forgotten, but that hook is probably worth exploring in a deeper game in some way.
Yeah, I think so.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing Goosebumps Terror in the Graveyard game. That's how many ratings it has. Oh, nearly 200 people have rated this game on Board Game Geek. So, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that one. Paul, what are you looking at here
for your number? All right. So my second one I have props for, because also my game did things that I had never seen a board game do before or since. So mine is Dungeon Fighter. And Dungeon Fighter was my gateway game. In one night, I played Dungeon Fighter, Terran Maple City, and King of Tokyo. It was a great night. And I was opened up to the world of board gaming with those three games. So Dungeon Fighter is a game where you are going through a dungeon, battling monsters, and you're doing so by throwing dice onto a target. And you strictly have to bounce the dice onto a target, and when dice bounce, they don't go the way you want them to. So it's just great, and if you miss, the monster will hurt you in some way. There are also weapons that make you do things in certain ways, like if you get a crossbow, you have to put the die on your hand, and then shoot it off like that. You know, so they mimic like the weapon in some way. If you have something that's like really big, you might have to take a step back from the table when you throw the die. The dice are also colored differently because every character has a red, blue, and green ability. And so you have to talk with each other and be like, I need the green dice because then if it activates, I can heal everyone here. And your blue ability is strong against this type of monster and things like that. And then the monsters themselves, like here's Medusa. You can see at the bottom of the card, there's like a little icon of covering your eyes because you can't look at Medusa. And so you have to close your eyes when you throw the die onto the target. And it's just such a blast, this game. It's just, you know, there's a lot of like yelling at each other and yelling at the game. And, you know, people are just throwing dice all over the place. And it's just something I've never seen in the game before and just a lot of fun.
And did you say it's fully cooperative?
Yeah.
It is. Okay.
Gosh, that looks like a blast.
It does look like a lot of fun. Yeah. It looks like there are two editions. So maybe there's one that came out in 2011. The one I had up in the screen was the second edition. I think it was like 2021. Is that the one that you played?
I have the original version. I don't have the new one.
Cool. Dungeon Fighter. Awesome. Yeah, another fun pick here. Well, what about you, Ryan? What is your number three?
Number two.
Oh, number two. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Number two is Tutor from Academy Games from 2018, I believe it was. It's again another Kickstarter. I really enjoy that they seem to be able to capture a very political theme without being contentious at all. You're basically there's a palace court that you're moving your courtiers around on in order to collect influence and kind of gain the air of the or the ear of the all the nobles at the top of the board. these tiles that give you different abilities or different points in certain ways at the end of the games. The end game scoring is different every single time based on which end game scoring card you select and which card you select that lets you. It tells you how to use the different tiles in each game. And then the other part of the game that you see in this picture here is the where the tables are. That's where you send the theme of it is to talk and discuss the matters of the state, and these are where you take your actions. And one of the things I really like about it is you'll get to take an action for every meeple you have over there, but only if there is a lord in the room, and those are those rounded, taller meeples. And so it doesn't even have to be your lord as long as there's a lord in the room. So it gets really interesting when you're deciding, am I going to put a lord in that room so I can take my one action, or do I put it somewhere else so that somebody who has two or three meeples in there doesn't get to take any actions? Very political without having to discuss any political topics or having any kind of contentious theme.
And you have rings that you can put on fingers, it looks like.
So yeah, when you go on, it's a little bit of a gimmick, but when you get up to the top of one of those rows, you earn the ear of one of those nobles, which gives you a ring of your choice. There's seven different colors, I think. And so the placement of the rings, if I don't know if you can find a picture of the back of the board, but the placement of the rings on certain fingers augments the actions on the tables. So if I've got a ring on my pinky and my thumb, then my A and E actions are augmented.
Okay.
That's cool.
I'm not seeing the back of the hand here, but yeah, I
So
understand what you're
forth.
saying.
I lose a ring, and so you can. Yeah, it's a neat it's a neat it's themed very, very well all throughout.
Really cool. Yeah. Tutor, Paul or Gabe, have you heard of this one?
Can't say I have. I really like the decision sort of conundrum that the lords create. I'd be really interested in trying that out.
Yeah, I've seen the cover art before. I've definitely seen the box, but never played it or knew anything about it.
Yeah, I'm just curious about the rings there. I want to give that a try.
Very fun.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for sharing it. Tutor with us, Ryan. My number two is a tiny game, maybe the tiniest game that we'll talk about today. It's from Buttonshy Games, and it's called Hierarchy. This is one I have talked about on the YouTube channel a few times because this is a game that, like many Buttonshy games, has a very small number of cards. Here's my little copy here, just a little pocket game. And it's a two-player dueling style game, but unlike many dueling games, I'm not trying to reduce my opponent's life to zero. Instead, I'm simply trying to outlast them. I'm trying to play a card in such a way that they cannot play another card. I in hierarchy, I'm playing one of these. We shuffle up this deck of cards. They're numbered 1 through 13 plus the imposter, and each player ends up having half of the decks. They have what, 14 cards, 7 cards each. And I know exactly what the opponent has. They know exactly what I have, because the front and back of the card is the same exact art, just a different color. So I'll have like the purple cards, and you'll have the other side of the cards. And all I'm trying to do is play a card into this line of cards, in such a way that you can't follow it with another card. And generally, you need to follow up with a higher card. So if I play like the 10 here, generally it needs to be followed up with a higher card. But certain cards, say, have an exception to that rule. And it's just a really easy to set up, fast-playing, dueling-style game. Each card has its own special ability. I've had a blast every time I play it. And it is, I think in the button-shy line, they release so many games that I think some of the great ones like this often get lost to the sands of time rather quickly because they release another game the next month and another game after that. But yeah, Hierarchy, I think, is worth rediscovering if you enjoy two-player games.
That's interesting. So you know the whole time what numbers the other person has in their hand?
It's a perfect information game, yeah. The setup is variable. I'll get a random hand of cards and you'll get a random hand, but I can see what you have and you can see exactly what I have.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. So yeah, that is Hierarchy as my number two. All right, let's get to our number one picks for hidden, overlooked, and forgotten games. Gabe, what is your number one?
All right, here's one that I think we'll all have heard of. Okay. This is from 1988, Scattergories.
Ah, cool.
So it's not hidden. You can go to Target and pick it up now if you want, I'm sure. But it is, I think, underrated. I don't know of a game that did the creating a unique answer, like a party game like that, before Scattergories. And that, for my money, paves the path for Just One and So Clover and games that we're currently celebrating in the hobby, into Crypto, Codenames even. And I think it's really clever, like, production-wise, a 20-sided die with letters on it, like, that's just fun. It's fun to roll that and see what letter you're going to get. So, yeah, my number one pick for hidden games is Scattergories.
I love this pick. This is, we have randomly pulled this game off the shelf.
Can I just play this a lot growing up?
You play it, yeah?
Same.
My family played it a lot growing up. There's a bunch of inside jokes we have as a family from some of the answers that we gave.
Yeah, I think that's, sorry, I don't know if you're...
It was definitely a family favorite.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of the fun of it too, is like the argument afterwards, if you're trying to get, if your group is creative and it's like, what, you put down island for things that have spots? And they're like, yeah, island is a spot or whatever. You kind of create these great moments of sharing wild opinions and testing your ability to craft a debate.
Yeah, it seems like it's one of those games that everyone has in their closet but no one ever touches, you know, and they really should.
It is a very funny game for the reasons that Gabe mentioned there. And just like, there are times where you should be able to create a list of, what is it, 5 or 10 things, but you list like one and then you're blank and you can't, and you're like, why? I know what the words for foods are, but yeah. I can't think of anything.
Yeah, and then somebody else shares theirs, and you're like, how did I not think of Apple? Right. It was so obvious.
Right, right. Yeah. This is a great pick. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned this one. It's Scattergories. Great pick at number one. Indeed. Paul, what is your number one?
My number one game is, if I'm ever going anywhere, this game comes with me. It's my favorite party game. It's called Snake Oil.
Yeah.
So everyone talks about like a lot of different party games, but Snake Oil, I hear, never really gets mentioned. And Snake Oil is just like simple and genius, and it's amazing. Where it takes the typical formula of one person's the judge and everyone else plays cards, but this flips it on its head and forces you to be more creative about it. Where instead of apples to apples or Cards Against Humanity, where you have one card and, you know, like, there's one card that is always the perfect answer for, you know, the judge's card and things like that. Here, you have the judge is a customer, and the back of the box does it perfectly. Customer is a caveman. And so you have to find two cards in your hand that make the perfect item or product that the caveman would want to buy, and you have to pitch it to them. And so every time you just, like, I just grabbed two random cards out of the box right now, and I got... anger and slipper. So I'm like, you need the anger slipper. You know why? And so then you have to pitch it. And then, you know, the next person comes up and they pitch something to the caveman too. The back of the box has like beard brush or stone paint and things like that. And, you know, you just have to like give a 30-minute spiel or 30-second spiel of why they should pick your product and why yours is the best one. And then you just go around the table and, oh man, you can get as like extremely funny with this game, just with the cards that you play.
There's a version of this game, or not, maybe not a version of this game, but there's a game about pitching a job to someone that I think is somewhat similar to this.
Fun Employed,
yes.
Yeah, yeah, I haven't played that one, but I want to.
It has a very similar feel to that, where like the most fun version of that game is flipping two random cards and pitching yourself as an employee instead of selling an item to someone. But very similar feeling, and it is very, very funny as well.
And it's a game that really doesn't overstay its welcome. If I remember correctly, you're just supposed to go around the table one time, one single time, and 30-second pitches. And it's like conducive to that type of game where right after you finish, everybody's like, do we really want this to be over? Should we just run?
That's great. Great pick, Paul, at your number one with Snake Oil. And that leaves us with Ryan. What is your number one?
All right. This one is Eons. This is another Kickstarter, as I said before, space-themed, from 2013, actually. It's in my top 10 Kickstarter forays. Any project that was that didn't deliver, I think there's only been a couple of them, all worth it just for this game. I absolutely love this game. I try and share it with everybody I can. You're basically playing as a divine deity who creating a galaxy. So it's a massive deck of cards, black holes, asteroids. And the main mechanic is when you build a star, you take the cubes, which represent elements, and place them on the star. And those are the elements that make up the star. And one of the rounds in the game is the fusion stage, which your stars undergo fusion, and you can change the elements on the star to different elements based on the conversion table. And you can, as the divine being, can take some of those elements off to pay for other cards, planets, and add life to your planets and civilization to your planets in order to score points. And in such a way that your stars don't die until you want them to. The way the game ends is by stars collapsing, but your stars need to support the planets that you place. So there's some really nice, hear that very often, take that is generally something that people want to stay away from, but it's not a debilitating thing where somebody can just go in and wreck your whole game. You can send meteor showers to try and destroy a star or planet so that you can continue to build out. It's a load of fun. Every time you play, you get to organize your galaxy, and just on the table, when you look at what you've created with the cards and how you've organized it, which planets are surrounding which stars, they all have fun names too. One of those Kickstarter things: name a star, name a planet, that kind of thing. It's super fun.
That's really cool. The whole idea of creating your own system of planets with a unique combination of cubes. I think that sounds like a lot of fun. Awesome. Well, Ryan, thank you for sharing Eons as your number one. And I pulled up my number one here, which is a game called Rumble Nation. This is a game out of Japan that I think is probably my favorite game with direct player interaction, because it is a game about conquering this island nation. Let's see if I can find a good photo of the board here. Yeah, here's a pretty good photo of the board. And I actually, just by sheer coincidence, I played this at a game day this past weekend. The gameplay is very simple. You are just trying to have the majority of cubes on a territory. And the value of that territory is equal to the number on that territory. So at the beginning of the game, you randomly set up numbers 2 through 12, these little tiles on each of the territories. Here's a nice picture here. So you can see this territory is worth 9 points. if you are the one to have more cubes there. So they're randomly set up. You put cubes there by rolling three dice. You'll pair two of those dice together for a sum. So if I have a four and a five, I might put those together and that'll be a nine. So it says I can put cubes on the nine. And the other die determines how many cubes I put down, either one, two, or three. And one of the things that delights me about this game is that you spend the whole game putting cubes on the board, and then the game auto-plays itself, where there are no choices to be made in like the last third of the game. It's just you activate one territory at a time and see how it spills over into the other territories. So we start out with the lowest number. We start out by activating the territory two. I don't see one out here, but we'll say the three here. So whoever wins the three, in this case, the blue player has four cubes in this territory. That player wins 3 points. And then for each adjacent or connected territory where the blue player has at least one cube, they gain two reinforcement cubes. So there's this spillover cascading effect where even if the blue player wasn't initially winning this eight value territory, just by winning the three, it spills over into the eight and they have a greater chance of winning that territory. And so the spillover effect happens and you just watch it cascade one territory at a time. It's just a really, really satisfying game with, I guess it has direct player interaction, but it doesn't really feel like I'm fighting the other players. We're just fighting for area control. Have any of you heard of this Rumble Nation game?
I love this avalanche potential here where you can go for the two.
Yeah. Avalanche is a good way of putting it. Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, I think it's pretty hard to get because it is a game that is from Japan. You can order it on Amazon.jp, I think. But fortunately, I have heard that I think there was a U.S. publisher coming out with a U.S. edition of it or an English version of the game. So it should be more widely available at some point.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's Rumble Nation as my top pick.
I just had a buddy go to Japan. If we would have done this last week, I could have gotten to pick up a copy.
Oh, no.
Jamie, do you find when you play it that most people go for the smaller territory numbers and just because of the idea of that cascade?
It is certainly nice when you can get those lower territories. It does depend on how they're set up. Like the three or the two could be fairly isolated and they don't connect to that many territories. And it's also just the odds of rolling a two are much less than rolling a six, seven, or eight. So in the game that I played on Sunday, I was hoping constantly for a two or three and never rolled one. You are allowed, when you roll the three dice, you're allowed one re-roll. And so there's a little bit of agency there, but you are relying a little bit on the luck of the dice as well.
By one re-roll, you mean re-rolling all three, or you can re-roll one die?
You have to roll all three.
This is cool. I'll keep my eye out for this one.
Yeah. So we have a few minutes left. I'm curious if any of you, as we've been talking about these games, do you have any thoughts about why some of these games are lesser known or remain hidden?
I mean, for Scattergories, one thing I just wanted to mention is that it's a game that has an uncredited designer. And the games that I'm talking about, I think, come from a part of the industry in an era where designers had less of a voice. And so it felt a little bit more not like a no personal touch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think with the vast amount of games that come out too, you know, they just get lost in the shuffle. Snake Oil and party games, the big ones are the ones that everyone knows about. And then the rest just kind of disappear, get buried underneath them.
Yeah,
I think that especially speaks to the ones that I picked being Kickstarter games. Mm-hmm. From companies that were kind of using Kickstarter for what it's meant to be used for. They didn't get a lot, like I said, retail release, didn't get a lot of exposure except through Kickstarter. So I feel kind of bad for sharing these games because they're really hard to get. But if you,
I think that is one of the tricky things about Kickstarter, that even if there's a lot of excitement during the project, by the time it actually is shipped to backers, sometimes it's an afterthought by that point, unfortunately. Even some great games to that point. Yeah. Well, guys, I've really appreciated you creating these lists. I know that takes time and thought, and I really appreciate you taking the time and thought to put the list together and talk about it today. And for anyone watching this, when this video comes out, I'd love to hear your thoughts, maybe your top 1 to 3 favorite hidden, overlooked, or underrated games. And I also want to see in the comments, who has played the most of these games? Let me know, out of these 12 games that we mentioned today, how many you have played, and I'll award an official winner of whoever can name the most. Yeah. Nice. Well, thank you, Gabe. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Ryan, for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, take care.